Hello, my beautiful friends. It is I, Trussell, and this is the Dr. Trussell Family Hour podcast. I'm reporting into you from Los Angeles. I flew here from Portland. By the way, thank you to all of you who came out to the Portland shows. We sold out the weekend, and it was a blast. Now we're here in Los Angeles looking for a home for the Trussell family. And the hardest part about trying to find a house in Los Angeles is too many options. It's what they call a buyer's market right now. Everyone just wants to sell their house. People are giving like really deep discounts on incredible homes. It's amazing. The market out here is just incredible. Like people, I went into one house and they gave me a gift bag that had inside of it a ritual knife, three Asmodeus molars, like the actual molars of one of the princes of hell, and some incredible lotion. And it's like that everywhere you go. Some people give you flowers. At one place, I left the place. They didn't give me anything. And I kind of liked the house, but I was thinking like, you know what? I'm probably not gonna buy this house because where's my gift bag? Where's the pet? Like some places are giving like really nice purebred animals. I've gotten an incredible Lakinzi Looper, which is a beautiful part dog, part cat, part lizard creature that sings to you when you can't sleep and the sonic waves make you fall asleep. They're amazing, but their lifespan is only 8 days, which kind of sucks. Regardless, this one place we went to, no gift. At least that's what I thought. When I got back to my hotel room, three of the most beautiful women were there waiting for me. I don't know how they got in the hotel room. I don't care. And we made love for hours. And then at the end of it, they told me, hey, we were sent here by Roger Schenck, who was the seller of the house. I'm still not going to buy the house, but I got to say thank you, Mr. Schenck, for those beautiful women. It was a wonderful, wonderful evening. And holy shit, the MDMA was incredible. I forgot to mention there was a little bit of ecstasy that went along with the incredible women. So I'm working on it. I've still got a few gift bags to go through. That's another thing that's tough because there's so many gift bags and you have to and if you get them mixed up, you can't remember which gift bag was attached to which house. So there's a lot of extra work in finding a house, but I am enjoying the process and I'm sure that we'll be able to choose from the 30 houses that right now we are considering. What a great podcast we have for you today. Damien Eccles and Lori Davis are two of the coolest people I've ever met in my life. They are so interesting, so smart, a perfect match for each other. And lucky for us, they have written a new book together called Ritual, an Essential Grimoire. This releases on April 26th, but you can pre-order it. All the links you need to find it will be at DuncanTrussell.com. And if you love these two, do the pre-order because it really helps. I don't remember how, but I have friends who are writers and they explain to me that there's something about the pre-order that I think it pushes the books up the charts early or something like that. So it would mean the world to me if you're interested in what they have to say, which if you're into magic or spirituality, I know you will be. Like these conversations I have with Damien and Lori are the kind that I unwrap for months, if not years, after having them. So I hope that you will also pre-order the book. It's a great podcast. We're going to jump right into it. But first this. Friends, I love CBD, and I will be taking it for the rest of my life, and Feels is the best CBD that I have ever squirted onto my tongue. It helps me sleep, but CBD is better for almost anything. It all depends on the dosage, and one of the many cool things about Feels is they will help you find your dosage. They have a hotline that you can call where you can ask them whatever questions you might have about CBD, which helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. Also, and this is not mentioned in the copy, a lot of CBD tastes like you just shoved your tongue into the quivering asshole of a gargoyle on the side of a blasted church, but not feel CBD. It's wonderful. It's like the stuff the the elves gave the hobbits at Rivendell, if you're into Lord of the Rings. It's like some kind of elven magical potion. I love Feels. And even better, they have new CBD-infused mints. If you're listening to this, Feels, will you send me more? I ate them all. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You save money on every order, and it's really nice every month to get a new box from Feels. I love them, and I highly recommend them. Hope you'll give them a try. They are incredible. Go to feels.com/family hour. You'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/family hour. 50% off your first order with free shipping. feels.com/family hour. This commercial has been brought to you by the Pulsating Heart of the Earth. And we are back. Loves, I'm going to see you April 15th through the 16th in Austin, Texas at the Vulcan Gas Company. I hope that you will come and see me. And if you are thinking about buying tickets, just go ahead and buy them. I don't want to brag. Is this bragging? It makes me feel really good. All the shows have been selling out, so it's a good idea just to get the tickets in advance. And if you didn't get tickets, don't be afraid to tweet about it, because a lot of times you can find tickets that way. Also, I'm going to be in Phoenix, May 12th through the 14th. Zanies in Rome, Rosemont, June 23rd through the 25th. And the Comedy Works, Denver in July. Also, this just happened. I'm going to be doing a live DTFH in Los Angeles at the end of the month. You can find links at duncantrussell.com. Okay, sweet, sweet darlings, what a glorious episode we have for you today. Damian Eccles and Lori Davis are with us. As I mentioned before, they've written an incredible book called Ritual, an Essential Grimoire. You can pre-order that. And also, if you're into magic, you definitely have to check out High Magic, which is Damian and Lori's first book. I hope you will check that out too. Damian Eccles, he was the fish captain in the Midnight Gospel. Lori Davis is his wonderful partner. They're here with us today. Let's jump into it. Everybody, welcome Lori Davis and Damian Eccles to the DTFH. Damian, Lori, welcome to the DTFH. It's so nice to see you. How's it going?
Thank you for having us. It's going really great, and we're happy to see you again.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, things were a little different the last time we met, huh?
Yeah. A different world.
We moved through some kind of portal. Do you all have any theories on what we just went through? Is there any kind of esoteric explanation for this bullshit?
Yeah, but it's kind of long-winded and sounds like crazy conspiracy business. I think it all has to do with like moving into the new eon. You know, like in the Bible, like in the book of Revelations, most people think it's about the end of the world. And there's actually nothing in there about the end of the world. Like the word they translated into world is eon, A-E-O-N.
Okay.
Meaning that, like, are you familiar with the precession of the equinoxes?
Mildly familiar with that. And the only reason, because I like the way it sounds, precession of the equinoxes. It's such a pretty sounding term. But can you describe that to us?
Okay, so the way the sun appears to travel through the signs of the horoscope during the course of the year, it takes about a month for it to move through each sign of the, each constellation of the zodiac. Well, if you look at it on a long enough time scale, and this is the reason for places like, say, Stonehenge, you know, places that were significant to the spring equinox.
Yes.
If you stand in one of these places on the spring equinox facing east, you will see the sun rise in the same constellation of the zodiac for 2,500 years, give or take.
Wow.
And every 2,500 years or so, it makes a transition into the next house, into the next sign of the zodiac. So we are right now on the cusp of going into Aquarius. So every time this happens, there are usually major upheavals because it changes everything about humanity.
Right.
You know, for example, one of the major things and how this all ties into like magic is that it has to do with the way mankind understands and interacts with divinity. So just really short, just for example, like in ancient Sumer, in Sumerian times, in ancient Egyptian times, if you would have stood facing east at the time of the spring equinox, you would have seen the sunrise in the sign of Taurus for about 2,500 years.
Okay.
So at this time in human history, polytheism was like the dominant form of thought and religious expression.
Right.
Skip ahead 2,500 years, and if you're facing east at the time of the spring equinox, you would have seen the sun rising in the sign of Aries for about 2,500 years or so. This is when Judaism was becoming the dominant way of understanding divinity, like monotheism.
Yes.
So we go from polytheism in the sign of Taurus to monotheism in the sign of Aries. The next one that comes around 2,500 years or so, give or take, would be the sign of Pisces. This is when Christianity is born. This is why, okay, like you see all this fish symbolism in, yeah, the Bible. Jesus feeds the multitudes with two fish. He calls,
yeah, okay, that's cool. Man,
all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we go from polytheism to monotheism to God as man. Well, now moving into Aquarius, we're going to shift again into man as God.
Nice. Like it.
There you go. It's good, but it will be a rough transition.
Can we speed? Is there a way to speed it up? How do we speed this up? Can we fast forward? This shit's scary.
I don't think so.
Okay. So this is exciting news for everybody. You and Lori have written a book together. And mm-hmm. I got to ask, what's that like, writing a book in a relationship? Like, how do you, because writing sucks. I don't know if you maybe both, you know, you both clearly are disciplined people. I'm not. And I like writing, it's so brutal. How did you execute writing a book together?
This is actually our second one together. And we kind of did this one the same way we did the first one.
My apologies. I am so sorry that I didn't know that, because I love the book that y'all left for me. And somehow I missed that, and I really want to apologize. I did not know that you collaborated on that book, Lori, and that sucks. I'm really sorry about that. So you've done this before. Then how do you write both of these? How did you do this? What's your process?
We kind of do them separately. Like, I write my part, she writes her part, okay, and then we mix them together and make the pieces fit. That's the cool way it tends to work for us.
Well, Damien just sort of sends all these like crazy texts. Like, he just texts the whole book.
You know, cool, you've got a bunch of them.
And so
I love your texts are the best.
So he'll send me these big chunks of texts. Not like, yes, I'm not saying texts. I'm saying literal phone texts.
Yeah.
And then I've got to like take them and, you know, cut and paste them and put them. So, I mean, I'm happy to get whatever he's going to send me, but it is like anyone who edits Damien's books, it's like all day long, they're just going to be getting these like little things and they got to figure out how to fit them in. Yeah. So, but the stuff I get is great. So I'm happy about it.
Cool. Well, you're both super talented. That book is so good. It's one of my return to books, you know, like when it's a balancing book too. I love like your ability to translate. It's a translation. It's a book translating some really confusing topics into something very simple that people like me can understand, because it's like, if you try to pick up the original stuff, it's, yeah, so intentionally confusing. You, yes, can tell it's encoded. You don't know what you're missing or what you're misreading. So tell me about the new book.
Well, this is what we tried to do, is exactly what you just touched on. Like, so much of magic is like written in like this really archaic language, you know, in ways that we don't talk anymore. And a lot of the real stuff, you know, going back, like even the Golden Dawn material, it wasn't meant to just stand alone. You know, usually they would have tutors that would be explaining stuff to them. And these books are like Israel Regardo's book, the Golden Dawn, is basically his notes while he's going through this process, and he would have had someone else helping. Wow. Most of the time we don't have that anymore. So kind of what I've always tried to do with magic, like what I always say is there is nothing you can say about magic that's new. Like all of this material is already out there in some form or another. You just have to know where to dig, and it's usually right. going to take a lot of time and energy and effort and someone pointing you in the right direction. So it's not, I always think of it as like, it's not like we're adding anything new to magic. It's more that we're taking it and making it more accessible to people now, simplifying right. it, but not watering it down. That's what we try to do.
Yeah. And also this book is interesting in that it came out of a really dark time for us. So, you know, Damien, after he got out of prison, it was pretty much a free fall into like really complex trauma.
Sure.
And so that sort of just ate away at our relationship, at everything we were doing for a few years. And in 2016, we pretty much hit rock bottom. And so in order to start healing or coming up from that, we literally just separated. We were living in a little apartment in Harlem. I spent my time on one end of it, and he spent his time on the other end. We didn't really talk, but we just started writing, and I was writing these rituals to get me through that time, and he was doing the same thing. So it's really also a very book about healing.
Mm. How cool. How beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being so honest about that. You know, I get it. How like trauma is just, you can't, if you haven't dealt with this shit, try to have a relationship, try to have anything, try to do anything when that is shadowy stuff is floating around in there. I know. I get it. So that's beautiful. So now I can see that y'all are, have clearly it worked. They say a vampire only goes where they're invited, and if you're not using ZipRecruiter, then you could potentially be inviting vampires to come work for you. Hiring is scary and an easy thing to procrastinate, and something, if you're like me, you probably don't like thinking about, which is why ZipRecruiter is the most powerful technology out there, because it makes it easy for you to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents the candidates to you. You can easily review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the U.S. based on G2 ratings. It's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Find the right employees for your workplace with ZipRecruiter. You can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/DUNCAN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire and the best way to not hire a vampire. I wrote that into the copy. That is not ZipRecruiter. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. Clearly it worked. And you know, I'm interested in what you're saying, because I think when many people think of ritual, they either just don't understand it, or maybe they think of like what they've seen at church. But can you talk about ritual as a mechanism of healing relationships?
Well, it's interesting because I just read Ricky Lee Jones's memoir, and she talks about in there how she, when she was coming out of addiction, heroin addiction, she literally like would do ritual to every day. And I so got that, because what ritual does when you are trying to heal, especially even a relationship, it just, every, if you're doing the same, ritualize, try to ritualize your entire day, because it will help you. I don't know how to say it exactly. Just keep it together. You know, it just helps you, your mind from wandering, or your memory from going back to all the horrible things that you've just lived through, or, you know, have or are living through. It just gives you some kind of a discipline. And some of them, you know, some of the rituals are, you know, built on rituals that have been around for a long, long time. And other ones are things you just come up with to help you get to the next moment.
And that was also a huge part of like what saved my sanity while I was in prison. You know, if you can ritualize your day and like build a structure, there is no structure in prison. You're just in a cell 24 hours a day, seven days a week. So you have to create your own world if you're going to grow or change or not just deteriorate and degenerate. So ritual was the way I did that in prison. Like by the time I walked out, I was doing ritual work for up to 8 hours a day. So part of it is providing structure for your life, but part of it is also almost like kata in martial arts, where you're learning all of these movements that seem almost like a dance, but they also have practical application for the real world. And ritual work is kind of the same way. You're training, and I hate this word, but like psychic muscle, because it usually doesn't mean what people, you know, think it means, but you're training these faculties that most people never exercise. And the more you exercise those faculties during ritual, the more impact you're going to be able to have on your life, your consciousness, and the outside world.
It gives you tools.
Yeah.
So when you find yourself going back to a repeated pattern that the trauma brings on, or the heartache, or whatever it is, the minute you're feeling that, you have a ritual to bring yourself back into the moment.
Got it. I love it. It's, you know, it reminds me of something that I just read about. It's so weird. I don't know if you ever heard of Botox being used as an antidepressant. Have you heard of this? Because it makes you smile. And you could freeze your face in a smile. They were giving Botox to people who were depressed, and they couldn't understand why their depression was clearing. And they realized, holy shit, it's because they can't not smile. The energy moving through their body is a smiling energy, and it's lifting them out. So when you talk about these movements, you know, being specifically designed or intuited, or I don't know where they come from, to like move energy through the body, I get it. And I understand, like, I don't think it's easy to forget how just slouching, like, do you think that there's a way to not be ritualistic? I mean, in other words, we're all kind of doing rituals, right? You wake up in the morning, you go, fuck this. You're like, God damn it. Fuck. And then you go in the shower, you're like, fuck. And then, you know, you're doing a ritual. You just don't know it. Right. Like, so ritual is really, could you say it's like a consciousness, it's a mindfulness of how you're conducting yourself moment to moment.
So the rituals you're describing are almost like unconscious rituals, like people don't even realize they're doing them. When you become conscious of something, you know, it's like Jung said, when you make the unconscious conscious, then you start to live a different life. Like, you, once you become conscious of what you're doing, you can't just slip back into an unconscious state doing those same things anymore. Like, you're aware that you're doing it from that point on.
Right.
So doing these also kind of makes you conscious of how you're spending your time, your energy, your days, and everything else. You know, I always think also what you just said about like the Botox and the smiling and all that, and like changing your posture. This is the exact reason that they used to design like churches, cathedrals, and temples the way they did, with like these huge arching ceilings and the stained glass windows up high, so that when you walk in the door, you immediately have to look up. You have to change your posture. And whenever you look up and you feel that like slight burst of awe, even if it's just for a second, it changes your internal energy. And this is kind of like how geographical location and architecture can be used to cause some of the same downloads that ritual work can bring about.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about the downloads. Before we get into that, though, in meditation, at least in the style of meditation I do, and the way a lot of the literature I've read on it, the idea is you can't really fail at this. And if you're trying to succeed, you know, abandon all hopes of fruition. Don't go into this thing trying to do anything, and that's how you do it. But I think that is different from ritual, correct? Like, there are successful rituals and unsuccessful rituals, right? And if there are, how do you know the difference? How do you know when your ritual has worked versus when your ritual is off?
I think usually the way it, and you know, once again, also though, what you're talking about, like even Crowley said, do these rituals without a lust for result. And a lot of times, even whenever these were given to you, they wouldn't tell you what they were going to do. Like, they would say, okay, take this and go do this for the next 9 months and then come back. And when you come back, they would say, okay, how are you different now than you were 9 months ago? Wow. What changes have you experienced? Because here's the way you know it works is because if you do them and if you do them correctly and put enough time and energy into it, you don't have to believe anything. You don't have to have faith in anything. You're going to experience changes in your consciousness and in your life.
Bespoke Post for supporting the DTFH. This spring, revamp your daily routine with Bespoke Post and their new seasonal lineup of must-have box of awesome collections. Bespoke Post partners with small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every month. It's the coolest thing to get every month a new box of stuff. You deserve a gift for yourself. Order these things. They've got incredible camping gear. Like, they've got a box this month where you can smoke your booze, if that, not literally smoke it like a joint, but a way to like use hickory smoke to create fancy, fancy drinks. It's just an amazing company, and every month they're gonna send you a box of stuff there's no way you would ever normally buy for yourself on your own because you don't know it exists until suddenly you've got the coolest knife you've ever had in your life, or awesome sandals, or a booze smoker. If you're confused, you could just take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. Then look away. Don't think about it. And every month, you get the coolest gift. It's like you made friends with someone 50 times cooler than you, and they're sending you gifts every month. Plus, with each box of awesome, you're supporting small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your box of awesome is from a small, up-and-coming brand. Each box is valued at around $70. You only pay a fraction of that price when you sign up. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code Duncan at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code Duncan, for 20% off your first box. boxofawesome.com, code Duncan.
Here's the way you know it works is because if you do them and if you do them correctly and put enough time and energy into it, you don't have to believe anything. You don't have to have faith in anything. You're going to experience changes in your consciousness and in your life. So if you're doing rituals and nothing is changing, you know you're doing something wrong or something is slightly off that needs to be tweaked right in some way in order to start experiencing those results again. And that's what fires you up and makes you realize, you know, this isn't just mental masturbation. Something is happening here when I do this. And it makes you like hungry to know if this is possible, if it can make me feel this way. You know, like in the very beginning, the changes that I would experience were like I was in prison, but I stopped even thinking about the fact that I was in prison. Like I wasn't focused on that anymore.
Wow.
I started experiencing much less depression, much less anxiety. And it made me start to think, well, if this is possible, if I'm using something that modern science tells me is just, you know, make believe, but I'm experiencing these changes, what else is possible? And it made me hungry for more. I wanted to know what else was out there, what else could be done.
Well, here's another way for a ritual to go south. So I was doing this ritual every morning for about a year. And it has to do with it's like a vacuum, and it vacuums all the bad stuff out of you. But in that vacuum, I said, remove all excess, any fat that should not be on my body. So we moved to New Orleans. It's about 110 degrees. I'm running around. All of a sudden, I've lost like 20 pounds.
Oh, shit.
Then, which was fine. Then I gained some of it back. We're traveling, this and that. And then I come down with the worst stomach flu I've ever had in my life.
Oh,
like,
right.
I will not let fat accumulate on my body now. Like, whatever it takes to get the fat off my body, it's going to do. So I'm going to change the way I word that so that I'm not facing these extreme conditions where I'm losing weight. You know, instead, I'll do a ritual for perfect health.
Right. Okay.
That was kind of the same thing that happened, like, you know, we were using magic, we were using ceremonial magic ritual work to get me out of prison when I was on death row. And like, I would do this for at least an hour a day for this specific purpose. And basically what you're doing when you're doing ritual work is pulling in as much chi or energy or whatever, astral light, whatever term you want to call it, pulling as much in as you possibly can, and then stamping an intent on it and then releasing it to go do what you want it to do.
Right.
So when I was doing that, the way I would word my intention, I would say, let me be home free from prison, living happily with Lori. Let it come about in a way that brings harm to none and is for the good of all. And in no way let this reverse or bring on me any curse. And that was the intention I would use.
Wow.
Well, within less than a year, I walked off of death row. But it happened exactly. I didn't say, let me get found innocent. I didn't say, let me get a new trial. I didn't say, let them catch the person who actually did this. I just said, let me be home free from prison. And we ended up with that crazy Alfred plea. So it makes you realize you really need to think about what you're wanting in this situation, right, and how you're wanting it before you start doing it.
Yeah, it seems like part of the ego is it wants to come up with the how versus the result. And if you get too specific about the how, then you're trying to think for a much bigger intelligence that probably doesn't need your help. You just need to know where you want to be, not how. Like getting on a plane, you don't need to know how to fly a fucking plane. No, you don't need to call to the front and tell the pilot what to do. Okay, I get that. And thank you. I love that. We're trying to buy a house in Los Angeles, and right after I'm done with this, I'm going to do a ritual for sure. Anything. What do I need to do? Contact Lucifer. I'll do everything. Whoever can get us the house. Lucifer is actually the name of our realtor. I'm just kidding. That would be so cool though. Okay. So I want to, obviously we can use ritual for what you're describing, which is beautiful, but there's so many rituals that are designed, it seems like, to make contact with something, with beings, and some of them are very specific beings, you know, and some of them are, so I wonder if you could explain to me about those rituals versus the ones you just described. And also, is there a kind of generalized name for those beings that in so many grimoires and in so many rituals are being invoked?
There are. I usually just call them, you know, when you're talking about whatever tradition it is, like, you know, you've got names for energy and all these different traditions like chi or prana or whatever, but you can kind of make it non-denominational by just calling it energy. I always kind of do the same thing with these entities by just calling them intelligences. Like whatever you want to call them, whether you want to call them angels or whether you want to call them, you know, whatever it is, they're a kind of disincarnate intelligence, an intelligence that exists on every level of reality that we do, except the physical. They exist on the mental, the emotional, the astral, the etheric, the spiritual, all of that. They just aren't in our physical realm. And like in magic, some of these rituals, I mean, when you see like just how perfect some of these things are, how they're designed, you realize there's something at play here more than just, you know, these rituals are more than just children of the human intellect. They're like mathematical formula almost in their perfection and in what they do. Well, in magic, they say, this is kind of the opposite of anthropology or sociology or archaeology, where they say like, we develop these things gradually over time. In magic, they say, no, we were given these by these outside intelligences. Oh, wow. And we are losing parts of it as we move forward. Like, wow. Because it's almost like that game of telephone, you know, where right. a person whispers it to somebody else and it gets mangled by the time sure. it gets back around. Kind of the same thing has happened with magic. It's still cohesive enough where if you know where to look and where to dig and what rituals to do, you can still get the results out of it. But it's not in a you know, solid, cohesive form the way it once was. But the easiest way to describe it is essentially what we're doing is working our way backwards through the process of creation. Like at the top of the chain, at the top of Jacob's ladder, you have the source of creation that everything came from and that everything will one day return to. And then slightly below that, you've got the fixed stars. Slightly below that, you've got the constellations. Slightly below okay. that, you've got the planets. Below that, the bottom rung on this ladder is the elements. Well, what we're doing when we're doing these rituals is working our way back up this ladder in reverse to reach the source of creation. Kind of the point of it, yes, you will come in contact with other things, with other entities. I mean, that was part of how I learned about things like the precession of the equinoxes. Like, I dropped out of school when I was in ninth grade. I don't have a college education. I don't know anything about a lot of stuff in the world. So what this particular intelligence started showing me, for example, in this one case of the precession of the equinoxes, is it started to show me the sun traveling backwards through the zodiac. And I had no idea what that meant or why it was showing me this. Well, what it is like in the, you know how during the course of the year, the sun moves through the constellations in its normal way.
Yeah.
Well, every 2,500 years, the sun is not going through the constellations in that same direction. It's going through them in reverse,
okay.
which is why we started with polytheism, started with Taurus, and then went to Aries, and then went to Pisces, because it was going backwards.
Yeah.
That's what you see when you're looking at the constellations. So they tell you things, they show you things that you have no way of knowing for yourself. Mm-hmm. That you know, you're not drawing on this from some internal source.
Right.
Ultimately, what you're trying to do when you're talking about tracing your way back to the source, like in magic, when they say, like, for example, God created the world, the word God, first off, is like shorthand for this infinite source of consciousness and energy that lies outside the domains of time and space, or outside the boundaries of time and space. Well, if you're outside the boundaries of time and space, if you are infinite, you have no qualities, no characteristics. You cannot change. So if God wanted to experience change, it had to pour itself into the dimensions of time and space.
Wow.
It didn't create the world the way an artist would create a painting. It became the world. It became us. Wow. We are God. We are this infinite source of consciousness incarnate in a bunch of different forms. But we don't experience reality that way. We experience it as if we're distinct individuals, like I'm separate from you and Lori and I are separate from each other. Well, what causes us to experience it that way is this lens that's inside of us that we call ego. And whenever you do certain of these rituals, what happens is it will dissolve the ego enough, disintegrate the ego enough where you don't have to have faith. You don't have to believe.
Yeah.
You will experience yourself as the consciousness that is looking out through the eyes of every man, woman, and child in this world.
Wow. Okay. See, you know what? That's the difference between me and you two, because you two want to experience that, and I just say I do. But anytime I get close to that, It's scary as fuck. My ego lens is like, fuck this. Anytime I'm on mushrooms and seeing the thing, or like having the thing and the vision or the thing, you're like, God, that'd be so cool. You're listening to Terrence McKenna. You're like, oh, wouldn't that be cool? And then you're looking at your arms. There's fucking sacred geometry in the form of light particles you could see through your hands. You recognize what you're seeing as something you've seen in books. In the way you know, like, oh, I think that's Sanskrit. You don't know what the fuck it is. This is me. I'm like, I don't want to be this high. I don't want to know this. You know what I mean? I don't want this to happen. I wanted to laugh. I didn't want to see the what you're talking about. So is it always scary like that? It's scary.
It is. It's absolutely scary. Like, we think of it as, you know, when we're hearing about stuff like this, when other people are talking about it, we think it's going to be like bliss and, you know, exciting and fun and all this kind of stuff, but it is horrifying. I literally thought that I was dying. Like, I experienced the disintegration of myself. I started walking. We were still living in New York at the time. I would go out every day walking the streets of New York and looking at everything and basically saying goodbye to it. And just feeling the sense of gratitude. Like, I'm thankful that I got to live here. I'm thankful I got to experience this life and this beauty, even if it has to come to an end. I'm grateful that I got to see this and be part of this. I literally thought I was dying. It was not fun.
Right.
He came back he was doing all this like intense ritual work in the middle of the night. He would just get up and go in the living room and do it for hours. And one night he came, and sometimes he'd come back and report, like wake me up and report what he'd seen.
Wow.
And so one night he came back and he's like, he calls me like Munkin. So he's like, Munkins, I'm just telling you, you might just find some fingernails and hair in the morning.
That's what it felt like.
Wow. Holy shit. Y'all are perfect for each other. Perfect couple. This is all leading into something that I stumbled upon and was pretty freaked out by. I'm sure you're aware of Tesla's vision. You know about Tesla's vision for the alternating current for the engine that would shape society. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
So he, let me see. I have in the messages here. Oh, wait, it didn't. Anyway, the synopsis of the thing is Tesla is taking a walk and he is reciting a poem from Goethe, from Faust. He's reciting a poem from Faust. And after something doing, which is a ritual, so to speak, and suddenly has this vision where he sees the design for the thing that we currently are enjoying. It's completely shaped society. Now, what's really fascinating about that, a lot of people aren't aware of that, is that Faust, Goethe's Faust, is based on on stories. It's sort of like Merlin or whatever. It's like the notorious Merlin of this, I don't know, misanthropic sort of wizard that was existing in Germany at the time. And there are historic reports of this sorcerer. So, to me, when I saw that and realized, oh my fucking God, that's how powerful that sorcerer was, that they're working. They didn't get to see the results of whatever they were up to, but it echoed through time, through all these different minds, until finally it met Tesla's mind, activated a divine vision that brought on a new technological age for all of us. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts on how much, in other ways, our society has been shifted, evolved, or transformed by these non-embodied entities that people who practice magic are having conversations with on the regular.
All I can say, like a lot of this stuff, all I can tell you is like from my firsthand experience. Like, I don't know a lot of like all the theories or anything like that, but one of the things that I saw that I went through was, you know, we were talking a second ago about how in magic they say that these rituals and this information was given to us by these external intelligences. Well, what I saw eventually, because I became obsessed with this at one point. Like for probably 2 years, I could think about nothing else. Like I would have sworn that I was walking with God and that it was showing me all of these visions and you know, all of the stuff that was completely changing me. And I became obsessed with where does this come from? What are these things? What I saw eventually was that the way we understand time, we tend to think that time has like a beginning and an end, like it's a straight line and we're moving from the past to the future. And that's not what time is. It's not what time looks like. Time is more like a Mobius strip, like a figure eight laying on its side.
Okay.
So there is no end, there is no beginning, and this is very, very hard to put into words that make people see it. But what I saw were that these intelligences are us. We are traveling in this Mobius strip and giving this information and these visions back to ourselves in order to speed up our own evolution. Did you ever see that movie with Scarlett Johansson called Lucy?
No, I did not.
This was one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, I went to see this thing like 9 or 10 times in the theaters while it was playing. I would go every single day to see Lucy. And it even got to the point where like I did not feel right if I went to see another movie because it felt like I was cheating on Lucy. But I would go and I would watch this thing because it caused this profound experience for me just by the way they portrayed what she goes through. Like she's essentially this guinea pig. They stuff drugs inside of her and they're going to use her like a human mule.
Okay.
And the drug is like a synthetic form of this chemical that a mother produces while she's pregnant that causes like the explosive, like really quick, powerful formation of the brain, consciousness, and all this. They've created a synthetic form of it and put it inside her, and they're going to use it as a drug mule, but it starts to leak in her body.
Oh, shit.
And she starts to get massive doses of it, and it starts to change her consciousness in the ways that we're describing. Like, she starts to experience that she is more than just this individual figure in this body who's, you know, part of this infinite consciousness. So she starts contacting these scientists, and she's saying stuff like, I'm colonizing my own brain. I can feel myself reaching 100% of my potential. Like, there is no more past, present, or future. Everything is just one thing.
Yeah.
But the thing I don't know is, what am I supposed to do with this? Why am I experiencing this? What is the point of it? And the scientist, which is played by Morgan Freeman, tells her, the only thing I can tell you to do with this is the same thing we have always done with any information, with any knowledge. Pass it on.
Mm.
So she goes back into the past to the very dawn of like human evolution, and she encounters this like Bigfoot type character that's like, you know, half, it's like the missing link between humanity and apes.
Yeah.
And she passes this information to this creature at the beginning of human evolution, which is what starts it evolving into us.
Wow.
And that we're supposed to eventually evolve into what she is. That's what these intelligences are trying to help us do. They are us trying to help us reach our full potential.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. That is so wild. It's like we're like time blind, right? Like, there's something in us. We just haven't gotten to the point yet where we can where we see time like that. And so it's creating all the problems. It's creating so many problems. Earlier you were talking about this sort of disintegration of these magical systems and the, some kind of almost like an entropy happening with these, I think they're a technology. I mean, it's safe to call them a technology. So do you think it's possible that a new injection of data from the future versions of us, whatever you want to call it, is coming? That there's a possibility? Okay. Can you talk about that? Where's that coming from? How's it going to get here? Any theories on what it's going to look like?
Well, what I saw when I was going through some of this stuff, it was tied very, very much into the Bible. And it's kind of, you know, I'm talking about magic in the Bible at the same time. A lot of people think that they're, you know, diametrically opposed or that yeah. they're not compatible in any way. A lot of the stories that you read in the Bible are stories of magic. You know, when you're talking about like these prophets like Ezekiel and Enoch and yeah. John the Revelator, and they're talking about ascending up through the levels of heaven and standing before the throne of God. And, you know, when people talk about these things now, we're just like, well, we don't know what they mean. They're just like these mysteries that
right.
you know, they were maps and instructions on how we can do this ourselves, how we can see and experience the same thing that these prophets did. So one of the things that I started to see was tied very much into the prophet Daniel, you know, Daniel in the lion's den and yes. all that, but all these other stories connected to him. Like in one of them, it says that the king Nebuchadnezzar rounds up Daniel and all of these other young Jewish boys and sends them to be trained by what the Bible calls the Chaldeans, which are the ancient Sumerians. They're training them in the ancient Sumerian practice of astrotheurgy, which is wow. modern day ceremonial magic okay. in its purest form before it's watered down. So Daniel comes back and Nebuchadnezzar at one point, he starts having these dreams. He can't remember what he's dreaming whenever he wakes up. All he knows is it's scaring the shit out of him. So he calls Daniel and he says, I need you to interpret a dream for me. But not only do you need to interpret it, you need to tell me what I'm dreaming.
Right.
And Daniel says, you're dreaming of a statue. This statue has a gold head. It has a silver chest and arms. It has a bronze belly and thighs. It has iron calves, and it has feet made of iron and clay.
Okay.
So on one level, what this statue represents is the kind of empires of world history that the current of magic would be passed through.
Whoa.
So the gold head is Babylon. This is what yeah. Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar. He says, you are the golden head of this statue. You are the purest holder of this current. From this point on, this current is going to degenerate. So the next step down, the silver chest and arms, is the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire, Xerxes the Great, all those guys, those were the ones who conquered Babylon. Well, they also, you can see the current of magic passing through, because in these early empires, they all use Sumerian cuneiform to write.
Okay.
So the Persians, the ancient Persians, were still using Sumerian cuneiform. This is the closest thing that we have to the source language of magic.
Okay.
So from Persia, it goes to the bronze belly and thighs, which would be ancient Greece. This is where you have the ancient mystery schools, you know, Bacchus and all of those guys. From the bronze belly and thighs, it goes to the iron calves, which is the Roman Empire, the cult of Mithras, all of that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So you can see, as you go down the statue, every metal that it's made out of is becoming less and less valuable. That means it's becoming more and more diluted, more watered down, less pure, less valuable. By the time you get to the feet, which is where we are now,
yeah.
modern day civilization, it says it's made of iron and clay. So not only is the metal like a much less pure metal than gold, but also it's mixed in with clay, which makes it much more fragile,
right.
much more breakable. It says that once we reach that point, a rock that no human hand has shaped will hit this statue and shatter it, and the pieces will disintegrate to the wind, meaning this old system will be gone.
Holy
and
shit.
That's when the new one will come into being.
That's so spooky. What's the rock? Why are we in the feet? I want to be at least in the calves.
Well, the rock means, it says that no human hand shaped this rock. That means it will be an act of God. It will not be something that mankind does that brings an end to this.
Okay,
it will be an act of God. That's why no hand shapes it.
Okay, cool. Okay, I get it. And this, you know, throughout the Bible, when it is like talking about the apocalypse, there seems to be an emphasis on, you won't know when it's coming. You can't guess the time. And that would explain why, because this has nothing to do with humanity. This is something
right.
on a completely different level that is going to fuck up this statue that we find ourselves in. That's an exciting, I get, you know, like all the stuff going on right now in the world, you know, it seems like you can look at it from like one of two ways, right? And it's obvious, like from one perspective, holy shit, this is scary and horrific. And I can't believe humans are still doing that to other humans. I can't believe this is but then the other side of it, right, is like, but look at the outrage in the world right now. Look at the way, like, you could just see how, if we are to get to a place where the statue collapses or the new thing comes, there's no way to do it without an extended period of turbulence, right? There's no way. It's like, you know, when you're taking medicine, this new thing, everyone thinks, when I was a kid, medicine sucked. You didn't want to take medicine. Remember when you took cough syrup when you were a kid? It was like barf. It was horrible. Now everybody's like, they think part of healing is it feels good, or that it should feel good. It does. It sucks. Like, real medicine hurts. Yeah. I've had my ball chopped off, man. That sucked. Didn't feel good. It was awful for a long time. It still kind of sucks. Now I think about it. Yeah. What metal was that statue's balls made out of is the question. They don't mention that. So,
I mean, exactly what you're describing, though, this is what in the Bible they call the threshing floor. You know, like used to in the threshing floor, they would go out and they would gather the grain and then spread it around on the floor and then beat it with something that looked like a cat of nine tails in order to separate the good edible part from the trash part.
Yeah.
So when you're getting whipped with the cat of nine tails, you're not going to think it's fun. It's not going to be bliss, but it's leading to a kind of purification process.
You sound like my dominatrix. I get you, though. No, I get it. I think that's a good way to reframe suffering, too, is to understand, like, yeah, but this is think of any great thing. And at least in my life, it never was easy. You know, like kids, relationship, job. No, it's never been easy. It's been quite painful at times, but thank God for all that, because that I don't know of anybody who has experienced like real true personal evolution minus some kind of pain. You know, I don't know of that. Maybe it happens, but I'm not aware of it.
No, that's even actually a scripture in the book of Isaiah where God says, I have refined you not as silver is refined, but I have refined you through suffering. Wow. Meaning it's the suffering we go through that purifies us.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about just the other day, just about, say, like a relationship or a marriage or whatever. And we were out on the road, and which we've been a lot lately, just driving around the country.
Cool.
And we were listening to Adele. And like every Adele song is about breakup love, you know, she's lots of love stuff. And I started thinking about when we first got together, or when anyone gets together, and there's that initial like craziness when you're in love, and there's all that lust, and there's the, I just have to, you know, just have this part, you know, all that stuff. And you're crazy. You go in like, it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move through that phase, and then you start fighting. And then it's like from one painful thing to another. And then usually you'll have one like big thing that comes that you think, we're not going to make it through this.
Yes.
And almost every couple has this. And I told Damien, I was like, if you can get through that, all of that, but if you can get through that really horrible, painful part without letting go, as long as there's no like horrible abuse and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you really love each other and it's so awful, if you can just get through that, literally, I mean, you get to the best place ever in the relationship where there's trust, there's love, there's acceptance, there's all that stuff. But you have to go through that horrible time and stick with
it. Hey, as above, so below. Is this not what we're experiencing as a planet right now? The exact thing. If we could just get through this, holy shit. On the other side, among the fragments of this statue, there's something incredible waiting for us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
What is it?
A new beginning.
Yeah. Just like in a relationship, it's like you suddenly, I don't know, it's like you've gotten through all the hard stuff, you've done the work, and that's the thing too, you have to do the work. So how many, like you think about all the people in the world, and it's like as a whole, are we all doing the work? And then you've got some that aren't.
Right.
Which are going to, you know, so it's kind of.
When you go through all that also and come out the other side, no two relationships are going to look the same.
Right.
You know, think of it as like you, it's like in connection with your will, like your will, doing your will in the world isn't going to look exactly like anyone else's will.
Right.
Because nature is not like making cookie cutter people. That would be a waste of energy.
Right.
Like each of us are here for a specific purpose that may overlap with other people's, may have stuff in common with other people's, but we're also each here to do something very unique. And relationships are that exact same way. Like when you come out right. the other side of going through all those hell realms, yours won't look like anybody else's does. And also this, the new beginning that we're coming to, that's why you can't say exactly what it's going to look like, because that new beginning will also look different for each person.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's so interesting. I know it's clearly some form of singularity. And trying to prognosticate what falls on the other side of a singularity is apparently impossible to do prior to the singularity. Like you can look at technology, you can look at the world, you can, you know, use some kind of inner subjective understanding of yourself. But ultimately, yeah, you won't know. This mm-hmm. is the infuriating God of the Bible, though. That's yeah. so, it's always like, what's your name? Oh, I am. Like what? What does that mean? How does it? And I know it's been translated, but you know what I'm saying? There's a quality of the koan in so many of these biblical stories that yes. defy your ability to really like untangle. Yes. It's like, it's beyond a puzzle, which is a yes. hint about what this God creature is, whatever it may yes. be.
Yes.
So listen, y'all are such wonderful people, and it's so cool talking to you. I love that we talked about the Bible and relationships. And to me, this is like, I think in the misunderstanding of magic, people don't realize that anytime you encounter people who are really practicing magic, they're always so sweet. At least that's, maybe you've, I know they're not always so sweet. That's a dumb thing to say, but there's a type of people who practice magic. It's you all exude warmth, and there's a healing that comes from just getting to talk with people like you. I'm curious if you're still teaching magic, and if you teach it together, are you still doing that? Do y'all offer classes still and work with people?
Well, mostly what we're doing right now, both of us do, you're familiar with like Patreon?
Yeah, sure.
So both of us do that. Like we're doing classes through that. It kind of like kicked into high gear during the pandemic when everything was locked down and we had to stop doing everything in person. And we both kind of realized we actually like doing it like that more than in person. We sure. have started doing some in-person things again.
Yeah.
You know, little things. But I think this is one of those things, like I don't ever want to be the kind of person who's out there like proselytizing or yeah. handing out pamphlets or trying to convert people to magic or whatever. I think this is something, because this does require a lot of discipline, a lot of dedication.
Yeah.
It's not like it's going to work if you just get up one day and say, you know, I'm going to be a magician.
Right.
You know, the way sometimes people say, I'm going to, you know, convert to this religion or that religion.
Yeah.
I think this is one of those things that everyone has to find their way to whenever they are at a place, a point, or a stage, whenever they're ready for it. So I don't like to beat anybody over the head with it. If they right. come to us, then we'll do things. But I also hate, you know, for it just, I'm not comfortable with the whole thing about being a teacher. You know, yeah. I don't like that title, or I don't want people sucks. Looking at me that way or any of that kind of stuff.
No.
But we still do share some of this. Well, basically, the way I always look at it is I'm not trying to teach people. What I'm trying to do is leave a record of what I did and how I did it, so that those who are interested in doing the same can find it maybe 100 years after I'm dead, maybe tomorrow, right. and they'll be able to replicate or duplicate it based on what I leave behind. But I'm not interested in being like, you know, some modern day guru figure or any of that sort of stuff.
But you do find yourself probably having to deal with people trying to saddle you with that, right? Have you encountered this thing where you're always like, oh wait, you want me, you would like me to go Jim Jones. Like, you would like it if I suddenly started, if I became like a guru. Like, do you ever get that sense of like, shit, they want me to be the thing?
Yeah. I think people in general, most people, I think it takes a very, very strong, intelligent, and evolved person to move beyond this phase. I think most people want a parental figure.
Yeah.
They want someone to save them. They want someone to make everything safe. They want somebody to do the work for them.
Yes.
They want somebody who's going to show them exactly every step of the path.
Yes.
So, yeah, you do come across a lot of that. And
I want that. I mean, that sounds awesome. A daddy who takes care of me and shows me the path. Sign me up. I need it.
I think the only problem, the big problem with stuff like that is sooner or later you will disappoint those people because you are human, and they're going to see, they're going to have to see through their projections on you at some point and realize this is just another dude. You know, he may have did some stuff, he may have seen some things, whatever, but this is just another guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually part of what you should be. You know, one of my tutors told me at one point, he said, you know you've gone wrong on this path when you lose the ability to appreciate a good dick joke. You have to keep that humanity in.
Right. Oh, God forbid you go to that dark hell realm of not laughing at dick jokes. You are, you know, that is definitely a sign of like your rituals are fucking up. And that's so cool, man. That's so cool. I've heard, you know, some of my Buddhist friends, when they're talking about gurus, they describe it. I've heard one of them talking about someone, they're like, oh, he went and became a guru. Like they got a disease, you know, they look at it as like it's a mistake. Don't do that. And I love that. Like, I do think there's a discipline in like continue. Like, anytime you see someone who has let themselves turn into that kind of thing, you know, it never works out. You're always going to disappoint in the most incredible ways. And then there's some kind of fucking scandal. You know what I mean? But, and then, because people are pissed, because they're like, what do you mean you're not my daddy who shows me the way? What what the fuck? What? I saw you drinking wine or whatever the fucking thing is, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you got to steer clear of that.
Exactly. You do not want that.
Do you think, I'm sorry if this is cheesy, but to wrap things up here, would both of you or either of you do some form of prayer, for lack of a better word, for our listeners to, I don't know, just tune them up a little bit? Do you have anything like that?
What I usually do, and this is one of those things that's vague enough that it covers anything, because a lot of times we don't know what we want. We know that we want something other than what we have. We want to be somewhere other than where we are. We want to be someone other than who we are. That however or wherever we are right now just isn't working out in some way.
Yes.
And we know there's somewhere else to be, but we don't know exactly what it is. So we have to trust in divinity. You know, like we were talking about earlier, you don't need to tell it exactly what you want or exactly where to get you or how to get you there. Let it control the process. And kind of the prayer that I do, that I've done for years and years over and over and over, that takes that into consideration, I'll always just say, may the divine light descend upon us in order to protect, guide, and illuminate us on our journey through life and on the path of high magic. May it come about in a way that brings harm to none and is for the good of all, and in no way let this reverse or bring on us any curse. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you for that, and thank you for your time, Damien and Lori. Thank you. We love you. I love you, and I hope that we get to – I hope you keep writing books so that we keep doing podcasts. And I hope I get to see you in person again someday.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. We would love to.
Tell everybody where they can find your book. I, you know, and also I can release this closer to when your book comes out. But if you're doing pre-sale or whatever, just how can we find your newest book?
they can get it pretty much anywhere right now. The best way, I think, you know, you always want to drive traffic to your own websites or whatever. Yes. So DamienEccles.org.
Mm-hmm.
.com. DamienEccles.com. Sorry. They can go through there and there's links to it on there. But you'll be able to find it pretty much anywhere you normally get books, whether it's Amazon or Barnes & Noble or probably a lot of metaphysical shops. Any of those places,
yeah.
But DamienEccles.com.
.com. And Duncan, if I can say one thing, this is off topic.
Please.
But Damien has a hearing for DNA testing on a piece of evidence that we've been fighting for the last 2 years.
Wow.
So I just want to put it out there to everybody, pray for us, write letters, support us, come to the hearing, whatever. But this is possibly going to be
What is
going to clear his name and find who committed those crimes.
It will be on June 23rd in Arkansas. We'll be in court.
Whoa. Wow. June 23rd, Arkansas.
Yes.
And is there some, what you're saying, pray for, is there some possibility they're not going to accept the evidence or there's something getting in the way of this?
The prosecutor has been fighting tooth and nail to keep this DNA from being tested for almost 2 years.
Wow.
They lied at one point and said it was destroyed in a fire, that it doesn't even exist anymore. My attorney's got a court order to go into the police station and found it still there.
What?
They had lied.
Yeah.
Yes. So now that we know it's there, we're still asking, let us go forward.
They're fighting it. The state is fighting it. So it's going to be up to a judge to decide.
So we already know you're already exonerated because we already, like, no one's fighting that. No one's fighting that if they think it's going to incriminate you. They're only fighting it because they know it's going to humiliate them and show, holy shit. That is so exciting. Okay. We'll be praying for you. Where is it going to be?
You.
Arkansas?
West Memphis, Arkansas.
DTFH family, show up at this. Send good vibes. How exciting. I know that it's gonna, I know it'll all happen for the best. I know it will. And that's good news. It's wonderful spending time with you all.
You Hare
Krishna.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Duncan, so much.
That was Damien Eccles and Lori Davis. You can find all the links you need to find them at DuncanTrussell.com. Pre-order the book. Get some tickets to my shows coming up. Subscribe to my Patreon. But most importantly, thank you for listening. I love y'all so much. And I hope that you are having a wonderful week. I'll see you in a few days. Hare Krishna.